Welcome to the Pink Cloud Podcast. In this weekly podcast, we offer a supportive space where women share their personal experiences of getting sober and navigating sobriety while being young. In each episode, we deliver an amazing combination of heart-to-hearts and informative interviews with sober women without judgment. This podcast is about of necessity for like-minded women trying to seek and maintain sobriety while achieving more in their lives. Whether it's in sobriety, relationships, career, spirituality, mental health, or health and wellness. Created with sobriety, recovery, and sisterhood in mind, the Pink Cloud Podcast unites the voices of phenomenal women as we share deep and inspiring conversations of hope for a bright future.
Hi, my name is Lisa, the host of your sober show, the Pink Cloud Podcast. And today I'm talking about a hot topic, which is relapse. Now, unfortunately, relapse is a part of recovery. They go hand in hand, and it doesn't have to be a part of everybody's story. I know plenty of people who have gotten sober their first time around, never had a relapse, and have very strong recovery, but it was a part of my story. So I'm not giving medical advice. I'm just simply sharing today what led up to my relapse, what happened during my relapse, and what I do for relapse prevention today. So I think it's important sometimes to not beat yourself up if you are in the middle of a relapse, or if you're kind of toying around with sobriety and going in and out, which is what I did. So I was at that phase one time in my life. So yeah, it's just really important for that awareness and realizing that relapse, unfortunately, is a part of the recovery process. And sometimes we do have this back and forth period before we have this length of sobriety. So yeah, I'm going to share with you, I ended up getting sober. I went into a detox center. I was there for a week. I got out. I was going to a couple meetings here and there, some 12-step meetings, and I didn't really connect with anybody. So I would see people at these meetings, but I didn't fully relate. I'm young, I'm a female, and I had this idea also, the stigma that, you know, that society, I guess, had created. And what I had created in my head is that people in, you know, alcoholics, right, were old men and they're under a bridge. And so somebody with a still money in their bank and, you know, resources and a car and things like that couldn't possibly be an alcoholic because I didn't fit that mold. And so, especially in these 12-step groups I was going to, there were a lot of older men and or women with, you know, that were wives and had children and had their stories seemed very different than mine. So I could relate a lot to the emotion and to the feeling. So I could relate a lot to their despair. I could relate a lot to the feeling of that hopelessness. And they had a lot of hope though. So they did give me that hope. But as far as socially, I didn't fully connect. I would go to the meetings. I would read tons of recovery and self-help books. I was really on this kick of, you know, this self-discovery and self-help. And what I ended up doing was I did a geographic, moved to Salt Lake City, and I didn't go to any meetings or really wasn't connected to anyone in recovery. I thought at the time that I had it beat because I did not want to drink again, right? That wasn't even on my mind. It wasn't like it was an option. I just wasn't participating in treating, you know, alcoholism because I didn't think that that was my problem. I thought there were a lot of circumstances that brought me to where I was at. You know, work was really hard, the economy, there were family stuff going on. And, you know, I just liked to party. And I thought that I had just went a little too far and kind of needed to cool off. And so drinking wasn't something that I was thinking of doing. So working on being recovered was not on my mind at all. It was just, you know, being a good person and, you know, trying to do the next right thing, whatever, right? So I'm in Salt Lake City and I was a flight attendant because I had this great idea and I didn't realize at the time, but I really wanted to run away from my problem. So what better way to do it than to be a flight attendant? So to just completely leave life as I knew it and be a flight attendant. So that's what I did. I knew that if I drank, I would never finish the training. The training, we'd get up at 7 a.m. or be there at 7 a.m, sometimes earlier. And I knew how I drank. I wouldn't probably make it out of the state. So I thought, you know, I better not drink. And I didn't want to. There was no craving there. There was no obsession to drink. It wasn't like I would see it and want to reach for the bottle at all. None of that existed. So that was one of the things I told myself was I can't possibly be this alcoholic if I can see alcohol and not want to drink it. I'm not craving it. I don't want to drink. So it was probably just circumstances and I'm okay because I have enough willpower. I have enough knowledge. I have control over it. It's just a non-issue until it was an issue. So, you know, I'm a flight attendant now at this time. Just a couple months has passed. So not much time has passed. I'm talking about 4 months has passed from the initial time that I was in detox to when, you know, I'm a flight attendant working and going back out for a relapse. So I'm on the plane and I see those little bottles of wine or of liquor and they look so harmless. And I started thinking, you know, I could probably drink one of those and be fine. I could probably have one of those cute little bottles of wine and be fine. So what happened? So this is the start of my relapse. It starts out mentally. So for me, I started thinking about that drink and I started planning it. And I started thinking of all the reasons why I am not an alcoholic. And I started, you know, bargaining with myself and I started talking myself into thinking that those people in the meetings were just crazy and they just were judgmental and I have it figured out. So what I'm going to do is I am going to drink again when I'm ready because I'm not obsessed about it right now. So as soon as I'm ready to drink, then I'll drink because it's on my terms. Oh my gosh. Don't you know I obsessed about that little bottle of wine and I never even drank one. Okay. I mean, it was like a huge bottle of wine when it finally happened, you know, when I'm drinking bottles of wine, right? So I'm obsessing about this drink and planning it out. And so I have this plan in my mind that it's Christmas Eve. And so I initially got sober the very first time in September. So we're talking just a couple of September to December. So I plan out my relapse. Okay. So leading up to this relapse, it's a few months of me. I mean, it was a solid month of me thinking about it and planning it and talking about it. So if I had any type of recovery program or anything at all at that moment, when I start thinking that a drink's a good idea is when I would pick up the phone and call a sponsor or call someone in recovery, a Dharma buddy, call somebody else who knows me and I would talk about it. And they would probably say, you know what happens when you drink, Lisa? And they would probably remind me about those things I did, but I didn't have any of that. So it wasn't really great for stopping a relapse because I didn't have any resources. So I had gone into recovery or not into recovery, I had gone into detox. I had attended a couple of meetings, so I had some of this knowledge, but I had dismissed all of it and I'm headed right down the road for a relapse, right? And there was no relapse prevention because I didn't want to prevent the relapse. I wanted to do it. I wanted to drink again and prove to myself that I could drink normally like a normal person. So Christmas Eve comes around and I'm away from my family. I'm initially from California. So I'm in Salt Lake City all by myself on Christmas. So it's a great reason to drink, right? Plan out my drinking. I'm going to have two drinks because in some of the recovery literature, it says that you can try to control your drinking. And if you can successfully, then you're not an alcoholic. So you just diagnose yourself. It says, go to the bar and do it. So I thought that's fantastic. I love that book. This is great. So I'm going to diagnose myself right now by doing my controlled drinking. So I had one drink of wine. Okay. Because it wouldn't be as bad as drinking a beer and a shot, which is what I used to do when I would go to the bars. So I had one drink of wine and I felt okay. And then I had that second drink and I felt even better. So of course I'm not stopping at two because if two feels great, then I mean, three is amazing. So then I continue drinking and then, you know, heck with the wine. It's a, you know, a beer and a shot, you know, one-on-one. So it's like both. So I'm getting a beer and I'm taking a shot with the beer. And it just went right back into that spiral. I kept on drinking. And then what happened after that is, so I would go to like the 12-step meetings. I would run in there. It was like 911 call, you know, I'd run in there and I would like sit in the chair and I would listen. I was like, yes, yes, yes. I'm totally one of you guys. Yes. Right. But I didn't do anything else. It was like, I would use this as like a 911, but I didn't put any work in. So I would show up and like take, but I didn't actually do any work to prevent it from next time. So I'm like, you know, running in this meeting every couple of weeks, or maybe I put a month together. Like I remember one time I had like 30 days and, you know, they have you raise your hand in the meetings. And I was like, oh, I don't have to raise my hand for the first time because I have 30 days sober. Like, wow, this is great. But, you know, so all of this time, so during these relapses, as I'm having these kind of drinking sprees, right? So I classify this relapse as like one relapse because it was like I relapsed and then there was no kind of bouts of sobriety. It was like in and out. There wasn't like any prolonged length of like trying to stay sober. It was just drinking and then running with my tail between my legs because I had done it really bad, you know, and these relapses or every time I drank, I felt like it kept getting worse. I felt like every time I would go, you know, back out and try to drink normally, that it was like worse consequence than I ever had before. I was worse off then than when I first got sober, which was pretty bad. So I just had this hopelessness. I didn't know what to do. So during these relapses or during these bouts of going in and out, I did have a lot of guilt. I had a lot of guilt, but also, so some of the relapses, I knew that I shouldn't be doing it and I would do it anyways. And then I would feel guilty and then I'd feel terrible the next day. But some of the relapses, I didn't even care. Like I didn't care. I wasn't guilty about it. I wasn't trying to prevent it. I wasn't trying not to. It was just like, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go back out and I'm going to drink because I don't really care. And I did that for long enough. It was about from the time that my first time drinking, got sober in June. So it was about 6 months of this like in and out and kind of back and forth of these relapses. And, you know, every time I drank, the consequences got worse. The feeling got worse. I think internally it was more of an emotional thing that I just felt worse every single time. It was like, oh my gosh. And I'm disappointed in myself. I'm like, not again, right? Not again. And then I reach a point where it's like, why even try? Why am I even trying to do this when I absolutely can't get it? And I had, you know, my last drunk, I realized I had no control. You know, my last drunk was, I didn't want to drink. I didn't plan on drinking. And then I'm drunk again. And I came to the realization that only a crazy person could do this. And I didn't think I was crazy. I thought, you know what? Maybe I am an alcoholic and maybe I do need some recovery and I do need a program. And so, yeah, I came to that realization and that's what I did. I started being a part of a recovery community. I admitted myself to an outpatient program also because I liked the, you know, the meeting and the spirituality of these groups, of these 12-step groups or these refuge recovery, but all of these recovery groups I really liked, but, you know, I have that part of me where I need proof, right? Like I needed proof. I needed a doctor, not somebody who's off the street to tell me. So I just needed somebody, a doctor, to tell me I was alcoholic. So I did, you know, I had plenty of therapists and doctors that did tell me that I'm an alcoholic and I'm probably late stage alcoholism. So I got what I was looking for, right? So I did both. So I jumped in to my recovery. It was myself that put myself in these, you know, recovery groups. I put myself there. I went to the outpatient program myself. I would attend the 12-step meetings. I finally got a sponsor, so someone I could be held accountable to. I began to become a part of. I found a lot of women in the group that I kind of could relate to, but it was good enough because they had something that I didn't have, and that was sobriety. And they weren't in despair every day like I was. So I thought, you know what? I have to be open to learning a little bit and not thinking that I know everything. Because that's one thing about alcoholics and addicts, like we think we're so smart. But if I was so smart, then I could outthink it. And I clearly I couldn't because I had to try to prove every single way that I was not an alcoholic and that I could drink normally, but I just couldn't. I mean, if I could, I would have figured it out because I really tried and I tried and I tried. So what I do for relapse prevention today is I do surround myself with people in recovery. It happens naturally when you become a part of, like, just in life in general, of people who are uplifting, like-minded, like, I notice that I tend to be around those people more. And so I've been in recovery for almost 14 years. So just with the way my lifestyle is, I tend to gravitate and people kind of magnetize to me and I to them that are uplifting and positive and doing positive things with their life and spiritual and all of these things. So I tend to be around those people more, less around people who are destructive and, you know, self-destructive and harming other people and not doing things that are good at humanity. And it just kind of happened naturally. When I came in, people were like, you need to change your playgrounds and your playmates. And I didn't right away. I wasn't, you know, buying crack downtown. That wasn't the kind of drunk that I was or the kind of drug user that I was. I wasn't doing those things where these playgrounds were like these, you know, like trap houses. That wasn't where I was hanging out at. And so I didn't need to necessarily change those. It just happened over time because we didn't have a lot in common. So we stopped having some of those things in common. And it just kind of happened organically that, okay, what am I going to do on Saturday night? Am I going out? Well, no, because I have a 7 a.m., you know, sobriety conference on Sunday. So it just happened organically. So yeah, for my relapse prevention, I'm around a lot of people that are like-minded and I'm accountable. So if I do start feeling like, oh, there's a physical relapse, right? Where I'm going to drink or do something, but you can have an emotional relapse too. And so if I know that all of these things are preceding a physical relapse, which is the bottom of it, right? So when I'm having a spiritual relapse where I'm going back to these old patterns of thinking, or if I'm having an emotional, you know, breakdown, or if I'm, because I'm human, right? So I have all of these emotions and things and I'm not always perfect. If I'm having these things, I'm feeling out of sorts, I pick up the phone. So I have people that I can call that know me, that know the true me that I'm honest with. I don't have to BS them. I tell them the truth. I tell them where I'm at and how I'm feeling. And a lot of times, like, even talking through it helps me. But I know that if I stay in that emotional hangover, if I stay spiritually sick, if I stay in all of these real negative spaces, that a drink doesn't sound like a bad idea. I know that if I stay there long enough in this space of negativity and, oh, poor me and self-pity, and if I stay in that space long enough, I know that the drink isn't far behind. I can probably have enough willpower to hold off, right? Like, I know that about myself. I probably have enough willpower inside of me to where I could not pick up a drink and I could probably go like years, right? Maybe, or maybe not, but I probably could, just being the way that I am. But who wants to live like I don't want to live like that. I don't want to have to fight, not have a drink. And so instead of fighting that relapse, I just work on my recovery. And that's really what it comes down to it. I'm not trying to fight the drink. I'm trying to work on being a better person and working on myself. And in turn, that makes the drink a lot further away. And so, I mean, I hope sharing my relapse story helps someone. It doesn't have to be, you know, this huge production. It can sometimes, you know, the relapse is just something that just happens, you know, like it just happens. But I know that if I'm actively in recovery, if I'm actively working on myself, if I have a sponsor, if I'm helping other people, if I'm being of service in my community, if I have accountability, people that I live with, people that I know, people that I work with, if all of these people know that I'm sober, then these all safeguard a relapse because I'm a lot less likely to have a drink or to think it's safe to pick up a drink if everybody knows. So everybody that knows me knows that I'm sober. Everybody that knows me, everyone I come in contact with, you know, I don't, by any means, I don't shout it from the rooftops, right? Like, I'm not like a Bible thumper or pushing anything at all, but it comes up in conversation. I don't drink. Like, I don't want people to get the wrong idea, especially people that I meet that are new, like, oh, let's have a glass of wine. Like, no, I tell people that I don't drink. If they ask further questions, then of course I let them know why. I'm not ashamed of it. I'm not hiding it. But yeah, I don't hide it. If I'm hiding it personally, if I feel like if I'm hiding it, I would be pretending that I'm someone that I'm not. And I don't want to be that. I don't want even the perception of I'm a girl that drinks, or oh, I like to have fun, or, oh, you know, mommy wine culture. No, I don't want to be a part of it. That's not a part of my life. I don't want to be a part of it. I mean, everyone's different, but that's just how I feel about it. And all of those things do help me prevent that relapse. And so, yeah, I really hope that you guys got something out of this and you can relate to the relapse, you know, or the relapse prevention. And hopefully some of those things that I do today will give you some tips on how to, like, right before you want to pick up and use whatever you're going to use, call somebody, do something different, right? Change action. Yeah. And don't pick up, because if you're listening to this, you probably have some type of issue or conflict with substance. I'm just going to leave it at that. You can diagnose yourself. Like I said, I'm not a doctor. You can self-diagnose or whatever. Maybe you're just sober curious. But yeah, I really hope that one little thing you can take away from this. So thanks for listening. See you guys next time.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Pink Cloud Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This helps others find the show, and we really appreciate it. We'll catch you in the next episode.